One, go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to yet another program, another episode of our radio show, which is coming to you over the internet's Unlimited Podcast Works. With me, as always, is Ken. And, Ken, what did you want to discuss with us today?
Whether or not the PS2 can make it towards the end of the year.
Which probably won't.
You don't think so? Well, it's, to be honest with you, although people talk about how much the Wii has sold, there is one console system that outsells the Wii, the PS3, and the Xbox combined. And do you know what that is?
PS2?
You'd be right.
Alrighty. Also, the PSP is doing pretty well now.
Really? I thought that they were talking about discontinuing it. That's what I was reading on the internets.
The sales in Japan, I believe, have increased, but the main problem is just the lack of original games. Not so much, I mean, we have ports coming on there all the time. Whether or not they came out in Japan only before, and then come out here, but at the same time, they're not original games, so I think if that's the problem with PSP for a long time, it's just not many very original games, and occasionally when they do get an original game, even an example like Silent Hill Origins or Luminous, I believe even the God of War game, it gets ported to PS2. So, you know, what can we build for the PSP that is going to be PSP exclusive and carry on the PSP? Or, in this case now, the PS2, what will make the PS2 survive?
Well, in Europe, the PS2 has been the dev kit has been opened up so that people can make original content for that, and it also supports Linux. So, if you want to have a cheap computing system, you can buy that and buy some USB accessories and go to town. That might keep it going. Also, it's right now it's a very cheap system to buy, even cheaper than the Wii, if memory serves.
Correct. That is correct. I believe the retail price right now is $130. I could be wrong. Don't want to steer anyone wrong out there, but it's around that much, and that's for the slimmer model. Personally, I prefer the bigger model, which you can only buy used now, and that's probably about $190 or so used.
Really?
Pretty sure.
Okay, because I got my fatty over there for about $110. And it's old and beat up, but it runs well. And the real reason to get a PS2 is probably just the incredible library of games, including tons of Japanese RPGs. Now, that's what I play the most. That's where my greatest passion lies, right there.
Correct. There's such a diversity on the PS2 that the newer consoles have yet to fully achieve, and that is pretty much reason why it survived so long and has, I don't know if anything else has had the lifespan that PS2 has currently. I mean, the Super Nintendo, what year did that come out?
Super Nintendo, let's see, I was in middle school, so that would make it around 94 to 95.
I think it might have been more 92, 93, but it lasted at least good until probably 98. So that's about, let's say it's about 6 years. And then PS2, it came out, what year did the PS2 come out?
It was around 2000. I remember that because one of the games that had been developed to heavily promote the system was Metal Gear Solid 2, and then that got delayed not only because it was taking too much time to program for, but also 9/11 happened and they had to remove the Twin Towers from the game.
Yeah, I do remember a little bit about that. So it's probably hitting close to maybe a 10-year lifespan. And so really interesting, might even be the longest running system, and I don't mean just occasionally having a new game coming out for, like, the Dreamcast still has a game every couple of months that appears out of nowhere in Japan, but
those are mostly doujin, though.
Actually, they're mostly shooters.
Oh, that's right. STGs. Valid point.
Yeah, this actually does offer quality tiles, although the number of quality tiles are starting to lower, and then we keep getting the, you know, the movie license type games and whatever comes out for, you know, people to make a quick buck. So the number of original tiles for PS2, you know, they're still out there and they're still on the horizon. I still have hopes that some of the games that have been Japan only might come out here in the future, but there's only so far and few in between for the system to really be able to make it past the new decade that's upon us.
I don't know if it can last an entire decade, but I think it might have a few more years left.
Yeah. Well, I mean, entering the new decade as in 2010 being next year, if it'll be able to reach that point and then...
Well, when I said that, I don't know if it can last the whole decade, I meant from 2010 to 2020.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
But, so, you know, if people are going to convert this year to the next gen, I may convert myself later on, but there isn't really much being offered between the two systems that appeal to me. So I'm really interested in seeing how this year will progress as far as games go.
A friend of mine keeps touting Sega's Valkyria Chronicles for the PS3 and says that's the first game he's seen other than Metal Gear Solid 4 that has led him to be interested in the PS3. How does that... since we talked about JRPGs before, this certainly falls into that, slightly into that category, although it's more of a strategy, a tactical strategy game than it is a straight-up RPG.
But it does have the anime stylings to it.
Yeah, it does.
Well, yeah, now it's really interesting. You know, there's a lot of conflict between, you know, what to expect between 360 and PS3. For example, Star Ocean 4 was announced for 360, Final Fantasy 13 is coming out
for both systems, though.
Yeah.
But in Japan, Final Fantasy will be PS3 exclusive.
Correct, but Star Ocean 4 for the moment is 360 exclusive.
Right.
And also The Last Remnant, I don't know if that's a good game or not, but that I realized that was a Square Enix game and it is 360.
Yeah.
So
then we have a number of Final Fantasy versus 13, etc. That's so far exclusive to PS3, right?
Correct. So, you know, should we expect that games like the Metal Gear Solid 4 or Final Fantasy 13 versus, are they going to eventually be ported over the 360?
I really doubt that, because especially in the case of Metal Gear Solid 4, because that was the entire Blu-ray disc in terms of data storage right there for that game. Putting it on DVDs would result in a very thick box of DVDs. So I think that's one that we can rule out.
Well, I mean, there's always things we can do with compression and downsizing. In fact, they even announced a Metal Gear Solid 4 portable version, if you read about that, where it plays more like a rail shooter.
Right.
So maybe we'll get some kind of alternative like that. I mean, I don't know if that will happen, and I kind of hope it doesn't, because I'm kind of tired of the system not really having the exclusives that represent itself.
The thing that I think slowed down releases for the consoles has been the incredible success of the DS. And I'm not knocking that system, but it is much cheaper to get the dev kit and program for the DS, and you can expect a higher profit margin on the games you sell. So that's why a lot of Japanese studios have started gravitating towards that and moving away from the consoles that take a lot of time to program for and require a lot of talented people to program for. What do you think?
No, I can see that. I mean, DS is probably the number one. When it comes to the handhelds and consoles combined, DS, I believe, is the number one thing out there. It's very accessible. It's built quite a diverse library. It doesn't have very mature titles. In fact, I don't think it really has too many at all. I guess you include the Resident Evil title, which is kind of a not very good.
That was sort of the impression I had. I thought that the experience playing it on a DS would not be nearly as good as the experience I had playing it on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah, I think that was just more of a attempt to make money. It wasn't even based off the GameCube version, which was supposed to be the more superior version.
Well, here's the thing. The original PlayStation 1 version has some of the worst voice acting you'll ever find in a video game. And in my opinion, it's so bad that it becomes good, which is why I ripped the audio from that game and saved it as MP3s and have it up in my library for people to download. But the cheese and corniness of it kind of adds a certain appeal to it, a certain charm. And I can tell you don't really agree with me.
Oh, I mean, it's not that I don't agree. It's just the what would appeal to the majority. You know, we do have some eccentric taste.
The GameCube version, though, has some very beautiful graphics, even by today's standards. And I, in my opinion, the GameCube was unfortunately kind of neglected. It had some really good games for it, but very little third-party support.
Personally, I have a GameCube. Sometimes I forget I have a GameCube. I didn't really find much appeal to it in the end. I probably have about 3 or 4 games for GameCube. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I think of anything else for GameCube that I might be interested in, that's pretty much it. And I felt that it was, you know, first of all, it was the first system to pretty much fall off the market if you don't include the arrival of Twilight Princess. And it didn't really have much to offer. It had the potential to be better than it was, but I don't really see. It's kind of a mystery as to what exactly happened. Like, why couldn't they get good third-party games, or why couldn't they push out more first-party games that didn't all have to include Mario?
That's a good question. I mean, it was a powerful little system. There was almost no load time for the games. It was portable, too. You know, it was like a little little lunchbox. You pick it up, you take it with you, you hook it up to the TV, and you're good to go.
It had different colors.
Yeah, it did. And, I don't know what went wrong.
But something did.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a number of things. I'm not really sure how much power Nintendo has on its third-party supporters. You know, back in the Super Nintendo days, I know there was a lot of dispute and things that third-party developers had to clean up or do in order to get Nintendo's appeal of approval, or seal of approval, my bad.
Unlike Action 52, which released those 52 games on one cartridge for $200, including the infamous Cheetah Man one.
Oh, yeah, and all those Color Dreams games and the Bible games where they... Maybe that appeal of approval was probably the best way to describe it. So
The problem with the Bible games... okay, I'm not a Christian, and I'm not going to slam another religion because I don't think it's a good idea for me to do that. The problem with the Bible games is not that they fail at teaching people about the various events that happen in that, I don't want to say myth cycle, in the lore for that religion. It's that they're not designed to be very good games, period. What do you think?
I've played them back in the day, and I even played through them now. They're very simple. They're easily accessible, but there's certain programming flaws and really questionable things. And I know a lot of the games were based off of pre-existing games. They just sort of took the mold from it and sort of painted over it.
Right. Yep. Like the Noah one where you have to run and pick up animals and take them back to the boat and throw them on the boat?
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. there's actually a Capcom version of Noah, which is actually supposed to be pretty good, but it was only released in Japan, Europe. But, you know, back onto the topic of PlayStation.
Okay.
Did you have any comments? Actually, you know, since the whole Sony, you know, the rumors of Sony having to approve titles, is that something that you think might be a deciding factor as far as PS2 being able to push itself this year?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I do think it's going to stick around if a number of really good titles like Persona 4 keep coming out next year. I see it definitely sticking around for quite a bit longer.
Well, you know, are you familiar with the whole, all the rumors about how Sony has to approve titles and what they look at and what they don't look at and what's been rejected?
I know in the past that they were really trying to push 3D as much as possible, which is one of the reasons why Symphony of the Night had as much difficulty being released over here as it did. After it did come out, though, it sold very, very well.
Well, this is from what I heard. Originally, there was a Goemon game that came out for PS2.
Oh, the Mystical Ninja guy?
Correct. You know, from, if anyone remembers, the Super Nintendo era and 64 versions.
Yeah.
And supposedly, the game's supposed to be really fun, but I saw screenshots, it looks pretty hideous. And Working Designs was very interested in bringing that over here. And I guess it got rejected, nothing ever came of it, unfortunately. Another example is a port of a game called Soul Hacker. Not Soul Hackers, but the Devil Summoner. For PlayStation, it got ported to PSP, and somehow, for whatever reason, it got rejected when Atlus was interested in bringing it over here, now that the Shin Megami Tensei series was becoming more known.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be, this was actually a very unique example. There's a game called Oz, or...
Wait a second. Is that based off of the HBO series that futuristic prison with the narrator in the wheelchair?
No, not what it was. It was a beat 'em up game that was loosely based off the Wizard of Oz.
I tell you what. Could you fight wheelies in that game?
I didn't really get very far, and I'll tell you why. The graphics and the music for the game is pretty decent. I remember I played it for a little bit, and I saw the preview videos, and ironically enough, the theme song to the game was on a DDR mix, as well as the opening to the game. A version of DDR that came out here, but the game that the song and the video is advertising never came out here. And the thing about that game was, there was a lot of people hyping up, and there's a lot of people that were very interested because of its visuals. And then I couldn't really see why it got rejected. Even now, I don't really see why it got rejected, but this is the only time where gameplay might have been the deciding factor as to why it got rejected. And in the game, what is you lead out a character, and there's these two other characters that follow you around.
Just a second. Are these like the support characters that you have? Okay, you have
they're support characters.
Are they characters from the books, like Jack Pumpkinhead or the Scarecrow or the Tin Man?
It's loosely based off of. It's very loosely based off of. It's, for example, there's a girl named Dorothy, and there's all sorts of other characters. It's more of, trying to think of a good example. You know, when something takes the, I guess a good example would be, you know, how the Narnia movies and books are supposed to be based off of Christian folklore. And there's certain resemblances, but, you know, you can kind of...
Lots of fantasies like that, though. Dragonlance is no exception, as anyone who read the something article, awful article, which stated the same idea. But go ahead with what you were saying.
But anyway, you have two support characters that follow you around, and the game has this interesting combo system. Well, okay, you can go around and you can start beating up people like normal and use your moves and everything. But when it comes to a lot of the bosses and the more difficult enemies, you couldn't just do that. And what you had to do was you had to build up this combo system in which you would hit somebody, and then you would knock them over to your support character, and then they would do a move to them. And then you would knock it over to another supporting character, and they would do a move. And then you would just go back and forth until you build up your combo meter, and then you unleash a special attack. And this gets really boring, because there are enemies and bosses in the game where the only way to defeat them is to do that.
To use your combo meter, right?
Yes. Just bouncing enemies back and forth, and while, you know, dodging whatever's hitting you. And it just gets really tedious and really boring, and you know, while the visuals and everything were good, and again, I don't really see why that would get rejected over that, because we have games that play worse, but at the same time, it was just really, really boring.
My experience with playing a game with terrible play control was Rule of Rose, and I've promised myself I'll come back to finish it one of these days. I was really interested in the story, and the graphics were certainly very beautiful, but the gameplay was so bad that it's helped to diminish the play experience for me down to almost nothing.
A friend of mine really liked it, but again, he was more into the visuals of a game rather than its gameplay. But for me, you know, I can overlook things, but it's just when I was playing it, it just got so tedious.
How far into the Oz game did you get?
I got to the third level, and my friend got to the seventh level. And there's also, it got really difficult towards the end, and I remember it has its reward system, and sometimes it's kind of unfair. Like, for example, to get the best ending of the game, it was, you had to fulfill all these requirements, and then I think you had maybe, this is what I hear, I heard that you still only have a 20% chance on random whether or not you would get the best ending.
Okay.
This is a long game. This game is a good 5 to 10 hours long, at least.
Awesome. Is it like Wizards and Warriors 3, where there's an RPG-like system in a gigantic world, but no save or continue? Just set that up right there to crush your spirit forever?
No, you had a save system. After every level, you'd be able to save, and you had continues and such, but you know, there are times where you can just get destroyed, and then, you know, maybe, you know, you would be at full health, but then your combo meteor wouldn't be where it should be, and then you can just get pretty much owned over that. But the game, just to close out, is Oz or Over Zenith. It did, strangely enough, it came out in Europe and was translated in English, but yet it has not came out here and probably will never come out here.
Something like that happened with Siren 2, which is a game I really want to play. Now, I know a remake exists for Siren 1, for the PS3, but I wonder if they'll ever do something like that for Siren 2.
What was the story behind Siren 2?
I think it takes place after 1, but because these are Japanese horror games, it's certainly possible that it could be a prequel. I actually need to do more research.
Did Siren 2 ever come out here?
No. Siren 2 never came out over here. It did come out in Europe, though.
Yeah, that's a very interesting how that happens. When something comes out only in Europe and has never came out here. In English, yeah. There's many factors. A good example would be Shenmue 2 came out over in Europe for the Dreamcast, but didn't come over here. But the reason why is because it might have not sold well enough, or it was during the dying ages of Dreamcast, and they did. Also, what was really interesting about the European version was it wasn't, they didn't have English voice acting.
Good.
Yeah, they stuck with the Japanese voice acting. And then again, they could have just figured, okay, well, we're making this Xbox version, and so, you know, we don't really need to put in the extra money. And I know another game, I'm really happy it came out, was Yakuza 2. Yakuza 1 is extremely popular in Japan. In fact, there's even a live-action Yakuza movie, which not really that great, but it was kind of surprising to see it get to that popularity.
Wait, there was a movie based on the game?
Yes, the game Yakuza, also known as Ryuga Godoku, Like a Dragon. I believe I mentioned it to you a couple times.
You did, but I never realized that you were talking about a movie based off of a video game. Is it any good at all?
The movie, not so good, mainly because there's too much going on. The game is pretty good, and Yakuza 2 was definitely one of the highlights of 2008 as far as games go. But the game came out in 2007 in Japan, and it sold very well in Europe, sold very well in Japan, did not sell very well at all over here.
Why do you think that is?
There's a lot of factors. The main issue was there wasn't very much advertising for it. A lot of people, you know, whenever I ask people about it, they aren't familiar with it, and like, oh, well, you know, I never heard of it, it's probably stupid. And to be honest, the game is pretty deep, and it's very well done. And ironically enough, is Sega didn't really put much into advertising the game or promoting it, even though some of the scores and everything for it were good. But they paid all this money for all these English voice actors, like Mark Hamill voice acts in it.
Wow.
Who's the guy from Reservoir Dogs and the guy from Kill Bill? I forget his name.
David Michael Carradine? Madsen. No, Michael Madsen.
Yes, Michael Madsen also voice acted. Who's also that one girl, Elijah Dushku?
Oh, Faith from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct. They voice acted in the U.S. version of the game. And you know, I guess they didn't really advertise the game, so it never really got out. But surprisingly, sometime late last year, the game, Yakuza, the sequel to it, did come out here. And they kept with the Japanese voice acting. And they figure, okay, well, this is going to be a modest hit at best. And we wasted all this money, whereas if we didn't, even if the numbers were the same, we would have made more money. And there also was a large outcry of fans who did buy the game who said, you know, we really want the Japanese voice acting. And I'm very happy that they not only finally released the game a year after it had been released in Japan, but stuck with what, you know, made it appealing was, you know, its Japanese atmosphere, and now it's Japanese language released, you know, for us to be able to enjoy.
Okay.
Any other, so I guess we pretty much covered a lot of the benefactors as, you know, in comparison how GameCube wasn't able to succeed, how PS2 still succeeding. And, you know, what may be one of the benefactors, and, you know, with those examples of Yakuza 2, with the approval system, how that works out, you know. And we really can't, I don't really know what to expect from 2009. It's been looking pretty empty as far as PS2 games go. But I still have my hopes up. You know, I'm a little skeptical, but, you know, do you have any closing comments on that argument?
No, I think we said pretty much what we needed to say on that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing if there will be that one or two titles out there that will really allow PS2 to make it till, you know, 2010 and still be a mainstream system.
Well, what I heard, there is something I wanted to add. What I heard is that Sony has been making new PS2s out of scrap parts from repaired PS2s that they've fixed, that there really aren't any factories churning out PS2s anymore. Do you know if that's true or false?
It really wouldn't surprise me. You know, I haven't heard anything about it because I can understand Sony. I remember hearing that they were a little disappointed that PS2 sold more than PS3. During the 2008 fiascal year. So
part of it is that we're going through a major recession. people don't have a lot of money to spend, and the PS3 is certainly a good value for the money, but it is a lot of money to buy one.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with PS3 and even 360 to a point, where it's not just so much getting a new system. We're having this whole media conversion where, okay, I gotta get a new TV, I gotta go and update my movies from DVD or VHS to Blu-ray, I gotta, you know, update my system from, you know, PS2 to PS3.
I imagine the people who still have VCR tapes is actually kind of a small number at this point, don't you think?
Pretty much, but, well, I mean, for example, there's, you know, if anyone has, you know, VHS movie that didn't come out on DVD, but then may come out on Blu-ray in the future, and, you know, again, you know, these are things, or maybe like a bad quality version of it came out on DVD that was actually better on VHS, and then, oh, we finally have a good quality. So, you know, always having to keep up to date as far as what they should update and what they shouldn't. And Blu-ray, I haven't seen too many movies on Blu-ray, but it is the definitive conversions I've seen compared to some DVD releases.
Would you like to see one?
Well, maybe later on. Okay. But, so I think that's the reason why it hasn't really caught on, and even developers have to consider all these conversions and what they need to do and what they need to go through. So, I think that pretty much wraps that up. Is there anything else?
No, that's pretty much it.
Alright, did you have a topic you wanted?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right.
Well, I'm probably going to go ahead and talk about it right now. There is a game I played, and I had to import it from Japan with the help of my friend Higaki over there. And I paid about $100 for this old game that came out in 1994. And if I'm wrong about the date, I can always fix it in post. And it is Fate Stay Night, and I've played it. I've cleared all three routes, and I love it. I'm going to play it again. Later on, and I got the English patch for it from Mirror Moon, which also allowed us to take the English language voices from the PS2 port of the game and add them to the PC version, which still had the adult scenes in it that the PS2 version did not have, because Sony does not apparently, none of the major consoles, as one of my friends kindly pointed out, do not really approve of there being actual adult stuff in a console game, which is a shame. Okay, I guess I can say some more stuff about that. In this game, you take on the role of Emiya Shiro, who is a war... I suppose you could say he is a war orphan, because his parents were killed in the Fourth Holy Grail War, this strange conflict that typically occurs every 60 years in this one little town. And I'll go ahead and throw out a spoiler for some of the folks in there. There are going to be a few spoiler warnings in my discussion of this. So if you've never played the game before, you know, just go over to Winamp or Fubar or Windows Media Player and go ahead and hit stop. Don't get yourself spoiled. The Holy Grail in this game is not the actual Holy Grail from Arthurian legends. Rather, it's just a strange object, a distortion in Fuyuki City's ley line that would allow a magician to access Akasha, the root behind everything in creation. But it can only do so if it has enough fuel. And the fuel that would come from this would be epic heroes who are summoned to participate in the Holy Grail War. In essence, one of the reasons that I like this game so much is that what you think is going to happen, what you think has happened at the beginning of the game, is slowly revealed to be so many layers of lies and deceit. There should be no Holy Grail War at all. It only exists because the magicians that built this grail system in the first place couldn't agree on how to use it. And this whole battle royale aspect of the game, where the servants fight each other in order to determine which one will be worthy to reach the grail, That, too, is a lie, because the servants, the epic heroes, were only summoned to be sacrificed and be used as fuel to power the Grail. Once the Grail has enough energy from them, then it can be used to access Akasha and grant wishes for a short period of time. That was one reason I liked the game. Another thing, going along with this, is a carefully plotted out 200-year history that explains what happened in what Grail War and why. And as a result, that's made spin-off products quite possible, such as Fate Zero, which takes place during the Fourth Grail War in 1990, and helps set up a lot of the events that happen in the Fifth Grail War, which occurs prematurely in the year 2000. Another thing that made this game interesting was the characters, which I thought were very well written, and even if the main character is somewhat annoying due to the fact that he has a very weak ego and a very low sense of self, but at the same time, that in turn allows him to access something else that allows him to win. Let me see. Is it really a win situation? Because since this is a Type Moon game, most of the endings are bittersweet. There's one. Let's see. And you look like you want to say something.
Well, I mean, the thing is you know, for Helm, at least depending on how you look at it, there's the prize that you can win yourself, and then there's the prize that would be like the good thing to do. Are the right thing. I think that was really what the game was kind of trying to emphasize, depending on which path you go, was, you know, you may not get necessarily what you want, but you know what is best, or you know that this is the right thing to do. I think that was something they kind of want to emphasize, depending on which path you take.
Well, a big issue with the main character is that he's willing to sacrifice everything he has, and even his own life, for a dream, but it's not even his dream. It's the goal that his adopted father had. And but his adopted father suffered greatly for it, just as Emiya, the main character, will suffer greatly for it. And here's another major spoiler, so go ahead and turn this off if you haven't played through Ultimate Blade Works, which is one of the scenarios. One of the servants that was summoned is an epic hero who is summoned from the future, and it's Emiya, who has traveled back in time to kill himself before a number of terrible things happen in this Grail War and afterward. And his tragic story is going to be released as a novel that will continue this, show what happens along the Ilya route that was not included in the main game. So we have Ultimate Blade Works, in which he's trying to, I think Emiya is trying to give up that dream and not become in Fate, Emiya tries to live up to his heroic ideal. In Ultimate Blade Works, he just tries to be a man. And in Heaven's Feel, I think that it could be argued that he's willing to give up his ideal in order to save the woman that he loves, despite the fact that events in the game cause her to become a mass murderer.
As the series is kind of expanding, you know, we have to realize what exactly are the developers' intentions as far as what they want to happen, and if, you know, he can change, what will happen, or if it's all inevitable.
As far as changes that occur within the game, one of the things that's interesting about a branching story like this is that characters that were on your side in one route can become neutral or enemies in another story arc, or ones that were very important to one particular arc can be brushed aside in the following one. And a good example would be Archer, between Fate and Ultimate Blade Works, and in Ultimate Blade Works, he's the primary antagonist. In Fate, he's basically the guy, the Cordelia of the party, the one that won't always agree with what everyone says, but still cares about the group. And let me see, Heavensfeel had a number of enemies that we never saw in any of the other routes, such as Zelretch and True Assassin.
It's very interesting, and I noticed you were talking about the, you know, Helm coming back to kill himself. Could this be sort of, you know, this is what would have happened if he had taken this path, but did he really take that path, or is this, you know, an alternate dimension? Or
it's another arc of history, but it's not necessarily the in none of the the Fate arc would be the one I think that would be most likely to produce Archer's timeline, but he doesn't. There is no Ilya path in Fate, so it's not really clear that that's the one that produced Archer. He may have become a counter guardian and then become a hero of an epic hero for naught, which would make his story even more tragic than it already is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just have to wait and see if there's going to be more.
Well, maybe the novel will explain what happened, but in the following years there is something that has not been translated yet, is slowly in the process of being translated, and that's Fate Hollow Ataraxia, which takes place in a special little pocket of time. After the Grail was destroyed, the thing that was inside it, the theoretical eighth epic hero, Avenger, was released, and he was not very happy, and he wanted to try and create a better future for everyone. Of course, since he's the incarnation of Angrimanyu, the incarnation of evil in Zoroastrianism, he didn't do an incredibly great job, and his timeline kept resetting itself, the timeline of this little pocket universe. And I'm very interested in playing through it, even though it's sort of a fan disc, a way for the fans to see the characters one more time and perhaps see them happy in a time where they don't have to run around trying to kill each other and avoid dying, and so on.
Yeah, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
Okay. Now, I'm guessing that you haven't played Fate. Stay Night.
I haven't gone all the way through it.
Shit, man. You should have told me. I was just hitting you with the spoilers left and right.
I've watched the anime, and I've read quite a bit of it. And even the... I think I even read one of the doujins.
Oh, good.
So, you know, a lot of this isn't, you know, some of this I knew, but then some of it I just kind of expected if I didn't know already. Mm. So I'm familiar with what's out there.
Okay. Well, there's another reason that I like this. I love the NASverse. In fact, I've been making a tabletop RPG based on this stuff. I loved Tsukihime, which I played before this. And I'm looking forward to playing the Tsukihime remake and eventually playing Witch on the Holy Night, which should be a nice bit of backstory about the Aozaki witch family. I like how it's all interconnected and how each little game allows you to understand another facet of the universe. And I'm also kind of looking forward to Multi-Blood Actress again to see a little bit more about what's going on in Misaki-cho. I guess that's about it.
Yeah, I'm pretty open-ended for the most part, so I think...
I have a question. Have you... what's been your experience playing some of these branching story games? Maybe not this one specifically, but another one. What do you think about it?
Well, I like to stick to what would be the... the good path normally, but I'm always like going back and seeing, what if, or what could have happened and seeing how things turn out differently. And if, you know, and then sometimes I realize, well, maybe what would have been the good path wasn't necessarily the most realistic path. So I'm trying to, so it's very interesting to see what you can do, and then at the end, what might have actually really been intended.
And as far as the really good path, one of the things that's always made me sad with the PC release is that there's been really no definitive good Saber ending. And considering the kind of hero that she is and the sacrifices she's had to make, that makes sense. But I guess a lot of the fans want that kind of hand-holding that a good Saber ending would entail, among other things. Perhaps someone will be kind enough to make a patch for Fate Stay Night that will include the PlayStation 2 extra bonus ending that you can get after you've earned all the Tiger stamps. Maybe.
Yeah, that would be good, especially since, you know, I heard the PS2 version is not really the definitive version, but because it has that extra, you know.
And some improved graphics, but people have since come up with a patch to add the improved art to the PC game version.
Yeah, so, you know, I think a lot of people would be very interested in seeing, you know, well, if we can bring as much from the inferior version to the definitive version, make it even better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I would like to see.
I would highly recommend this game to anyone who's interested in this kind of stuff. And even if they're not, I would strongly urge them to give it a try, because it is a wonderful experience, and it's about the most, some of the most fun I've had gaming. And if you're an anime fan, or if you like Lucky Star, you have all the more reason to play this game, because it's been so successful and so influential that it's been referenced many times in other anime. And a really glaring, obvious example would be the Lucky Star OVA, where Kanata turns Kagami into Rin from Fate Stay Night, or all the references Kanata makes throughout Lucky Star to the game. I think it's worth your time, and I hope you'll spend the time to search out a copy. That's pretty much what I have to say on that. Anything you'd like to add, Ken?
I'm good.
All righty, cool. Well, I'm going to hit stop and get to editing this show down and put it up later on. Cool.